This is an Audio Wool original.
Excuse me. Welcome to Behind the Screams, the show behind the show. And today, Kelly, sorry, we just sat down. You feeling a little blindsided?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm good.
We're leaning into two timely topics, both involving telecommunications. Very exciting stuff.
Telekinesis?
No, I'm really sorry.
Telepathy?
Nope, none of those fun things. But to acknowledge Moon June, we're going to start by playing some audio leading up to the tragic loss of the Apollo 1 crew. And then, because we may or may not be covering the Ethan Hawke vehicle, the Black Phone, this week, we'll be talking about an odd couple of calls that a Texas military man received while on vacation at his parents' place.
Apollo 1, Byron. It's where our fake moon missions began.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding. Okay. I've thought about this a lot. I'm not sure that I buy into that anymore.
You're a total moon truther now. You think people landed on it and that was our intended goal the whole time?
I feel like a moon truther would be somebody who said we didn't. No, I feel that's no, a title that would go more
truther
along
could
with,
go either way.
I feel like truther at these this days point, is a pretty...
I don't know. Where's the pendulum at, Kelly?
I don't know.
I think we might be in a world where everyone thinks it was faked and it's hollow. And for some reason, it's flat.
Fake, hollow, and flat.
Yeah.
And only Earth is flat. Flat earthers believe that only Earth
Moon's
is flat.
Flat
the
as
other
well.
Ones. Earth and moon, everything else is around them?
It's all flat. Please put the candy down. That's your daughter's Easter candy.
It is.
I need you to put it away.
And you're going to make me listen to people die.
You chose this topic.
I was really trying to be dedicated to moon. Okay. In all seriousness, Apollo 1 happened 55 years ago, January 27th, 1967. So 55 and a half years ago. Three gentlemen astronauts, that is, Roger Chaffee, Gus Grissom, and Ed White II all died. It was a pre-flight testing of Apollo 1. So Apollo 1, obviously, beginning of the Apollo missions, which would eventually take us to the moon and create the entire foundation for Moon June, if you will. It was a horrifically tragic accident that happened really early on in NASA's history and almost ended NASA before it got off the ground, pardon the pun. There were a lot of mistakes made that led to this. However, the exact source point for the fire, to the best of my knowledge, Byron, unless you found something different, hasn't necessarily been determined yet. And there have been speculations. There are very few, even wild conspiracy theorists who say that it was something conspiratorial. But there are those in the far reaches who say, well, this was when they first came up with the idea that it was all going to be faked. And these three were true patriots and they weren't going to allow the wool to be pulled over the American public's eyes. And so they were going to spill the beans. And so they had to fake this fire. So I don't know.
Let's be even more clear with this. The rocket didn't even go up.
No.
It was a test run, a rehearsal?
Pardon me. It was a pre-flight test. It's interesting because the pictures of these guys look so familiar at this point. They must have had, I don't know, if you look at especially Virgil Grissom.
Gus.
Virgil. I like Virgil, though.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You like want to know I like Virgil?
Why? The root mirror?
It has to do with the movie we watched, The Abyss.
Oh, okay.
Remember his name was Virgil?
We've watched a lot of movies.
I know, but Virgil, I don't think we've watched another movie with a Virgil.
But
these guys were pioneers, and it's always been a terrifying concept to be an astronaut. You think about just going in this piece
brave.
Of metal. Oh,
very
my gosh.
Brave. Even the Wright brothers.
Brave
they
or...
They horrifically died in a test drive, right?
They did, right.
Did
yeah.
they actually die?
No, I don't think so. They did. No. Either terrifyingly brave or oddly disconnected in some weird psychological way that allows them to do that. But if you hear the stories of these gentlemen, they were definitely
heroes.
Let's not look too far, though, because I'm sure we'd find bad stuff. And today is not about that. Today,
a bunch of white men in the 60s?
Yeah.
No.
There were congressional hearings that almost shut NASA down. Huge investigation. Obviously, the whole nation was really jazzed about this. This was following...
And what were they investigating? Oh, maybe we should listen to it.
Oh, God.
Crew, can you request at this time? confirm it. Bad leader, get in there and help him. Bad leader, CSCC. Bad leader, CSCC.
Get in there and help him, huh? Apparently it wasn't very easy to get in there.
No.
No rescue was really...
Even attempted, shall we say?
Well, the plug door hatch, it just couldn't be opened because there's pressure from the cabin.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, oxygen-rich environment is pretty good for fire as well.
Yeah. So apparently, Byron, the day...
Oh, it's not done.
Oh, God.
All right, sir, did we get verification? Can you eat this at this time? Yes, can you read it? Bad leader. Can you get a lot of this?
Okay, so Byron, that was right around 6:31 p.m. that you're playing that. And interestingly, there were issues that came up actually before that on this rehearsal. The whole point of this was to simulate flight conditions in the actual vehicle that they were going to be taking to space, but it was running on its own power, though on the ground. They had it running on its own power to see how things worked, yeah. And they were testing communication. They called it a plugs out test.
Okay.
However, when the crew got into the command module at 1 p.m., and again, think about this timeline, 1 p.m., there's a bad smell, and everybody's a little worried about it. They stopped the rehearsal countdown, but later on, supposedly, they found the smell had nothing to do with the fire. There were also communication problems. They couldn't adequately hear between the buildings, and if they were having communication problems, like...
At that distance?
Yeah, like, forget about the moon.
We're about ready to go up.
But so they went in at 1.
Yeah.
It was 6:31.
Can you describe the smell?
I don't know what the smell was, I'm
Is
afraid.
Is it a fart?
It could have been a
Grissom
toot.
Could have...
They were in there for 5.5 hours.
That's just another day at the job.
Yeah, in a tiny capsule that became your coffin.
It's another day at the office.
Grissom, funny you mentioned that, had some reservations going into this. And according to his son, really had put forth a lot of effort trying to voice those concerns. Hmm. His son Mark said, I was kind of expecting him not to go, because he was so concerned about what was going on and that the technology wasn't being properly assessed and things were moving too quickly. But he had previously been a Mercury 7 astronaut and had also been the command pilot for Gemini 3. I guess he just trusted that it was going to be okay.
He'd been in space.
Yes.
He was actually the second American to fly in space.
Perhaps that's why he thought that this was going to end up being okay.
Or maybe that's why he was uncomfortable too, because he'd been up there, he knew the process, and
didn't feel like that. One of the other three astronauts, Ed White, he was the first American to do a spacewalk. Regular old all-American hero, went to West Point, played 2 sports at West Point, liked woodworking, even built his daughter a balance beam. Supposed to be a really nice guy. All of these guys were nervous to a certain degree and felt like things weren't going well. Grissom was the most vocal about it. But you'll hear a lot of complaints that there are many discussions and tributes. And certainly for me, Byron, I don't know if this is true for you, but growing up, I heard all the time about, well, after it happened, but the Columbia and the Challenger incidents.
Now watch closely.
Right.
It appears
there
that you're going to see numerous trails of smoke or vapor. Looks like some kind of explosion might have happened there. And then you see a bright glow. That happens on reentry because there's going to be friction from the Earth's atmosphere. But now we see multiple objects, numerous trails. And at this point, NASA is confirming that it lost contact with the shuttle scheduled to land at 8:16 Texas time. It's now 8:27, well behind schedule.
Very quickly here, as Brad has been speaking to you, I've been watching what's coming over the wires. Reporters at the landing strip in Florida were ordered away by NASA 7 minutes after the scheduled touchdown, with still no sign of the shuttle. In 42 years of human spaceflight, NASA has never lost a space crew during a landing or a ride back into orbit. As you remember, of course, in 1986, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded shortly after takeoff.
So the 25th Space Shuttle mission is now on the way after more delays than NASA cares to count. This morning, it looked as though they were not going to be able to get off.
1 minute, 15 seconds, velocity 2,900 feet per second, altitude 9 nautical miles, downrange distance 7 nautical miles.
Looks like a couple of the solid rocket boosters blew away from the side of the shuttle in an explosion.
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction.
Those were part of my historical frame of reference growing up. Apollo 1 wasn't. In fact, I don't really remember when it came into my sphere of knowledge that there had been this huge accident with the very, very first Apollo crew.
Well, there was this very popular scene in Apollo 13.
See, and I don't even remember that. How bad is that?
Dad, did you know the astronauts on the fire?
Yeah, I did. I knew the astronauts in the fire. All of them.
That happen again?
Well, I'll tell you something about that fire.
Oh, is that good old Tom?
A lot of things went wrong.
Tom telling his little boy about it.
Before his little boy grew up to be a cray cray, and then
this is not his real.
Oh, it isn't.
Tom Hanks didn't go to space.
Oh, Kelly. He didn't.
No.
Are you sure?
Well, he was.
That was a part of my historical frame of reference too.
All right, so let's wrap up this little chunk of.
According to. Reports released from the autopsy and investigation.
Uh-oh. You're already doing conspiracy talk.
And I don't mean it in terms of conspiracy. I mean just from a public perception standpoint.
That's true. Yeah.
If these guys died long, painful, horrible deaths, they weren't gonna write it down. They were gonna say that they didn't, right?
Not
it didn't
then.
Matter. I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was alien. I'm just kidding. No, I don't think it had anything to do with aliens. But the official report said the rapid spread of fire caused an increase in pressure and temperature, which resulted in rupture of the command module and creation of a toxic atmosphere. Death of the crew was from asphyxia due to inhalation of toxic gases due to fire. A contributory cause of death was thermal burns. Non-uniform distribution of carbon hemoglobin was found by the autopsy. Autopsy data leads to the medical opinion that unconsciousness occurred rapidly and that death followed soon thereafter.
Yeah, well, at least they were unconscious.
Hopefully.
It seems that way. And they might have been burning to death after losing consciousness.
The horrible part about it was they were all in really good shape training for this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I would imagine that incredible shape kept them conscious for longer than like a me or you in that scenario. My lung capacity, I'm going to fill up real quick with that and be gone real quick.
Sure.
If I was fit as a fiddle like these guys, I'd probably be more drawn out and painful.
They were doing a lot of shouting, which doesn't make for very good breath holding. I'm saying that because it's probably better that they died quickly.
Yeah.
It's good to know, though, afterwards. We did make it. We made it to the moon, maybe.
We did.
I don't know. Go back to our Moon June segments. I have no idea where we are, where we land on the moon.
Yeah.
But happy Moon June, everyone.
Big change.
Okay.
The capsule from that point forward, the hatch would open outward quickly.
Outward?
Yep.
Not inward.
Yeah.
How could it open outward with the pressure?
Yeah, it was a pretty big design flaw, I do believe.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
I think that's why they couldn't get in.
Big old fuck up. Yeah. Wow. Happy Moon June, everyone.
Happy Moon June. Rest in peace, astronauts. Thanks for getting us to the moon.
Ed and Gus and Roger.
And also that cosmonaut that died that nobody
The one that burnt up in Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad story.
We did that, didn't we? Was that
last
year?
I think
we did it
for
Moon June.
We did it for the Sputnik movie, didn't we?
Ah, yes. Yeah, that was fun. Well, moving forward, a little bit of fun audio that I found that, man, God damn it.
This was supposed to be a quick little thing. Look at what you did.
Well, I fell into this, and I just should say that it pains me to be so brief, especially considering I mean, you guys are going to be surprised to know that this is maybe not necessarily a Byron story, but we're going to jump right into it.
Wait, it's my story?
So there's this conference in 2006, and the name of the conference I will reveal later. I just don't want to spoil this story. This woman named Sue Swiatek, I'm probably saying that wrong, she was giving a presentation. It's her account of another person's account that I'll be retelling, and I believe that that is where this all started. But it actually all started back in 1993. Gary Sudbrink, he was a captain in the Air Force. I also heard this woman, Sue, say that he was a pharmacist, which is a detail that I saw left out of a lot of other people's.
Well, that's very interesting.
I guess you can be both. Captain is
can be a captain.
Rank. Pharmacist is a job. Either way, he's stationed in San Antonio, Texas. One weekend, he decided to visit his parents in New York. He got a three-day pass. It was a last-minute trip, spur-of-the-moment kind of thing. He booked his flight into Brooklyn, and when he got to the airport, he was in uniform, because it was 1993. It was kind of a thing that you did, and
yeah.
I still see soldiers do it all the time.
Yeah.
Before the flight took off, though, this guy came up to him and started some small talk, asking him increasingly personal questions, things like, I don't know, where are you going? What's your name? How long are you going to be gone? And then he notices that this guy has a clipboard with him. He's writing things down. When questioned, the guy says he's starting a business. And at the time, Gary was like, well, maybe it's Amway or something.
Of course, it always is.
It always was. I don't know if it still is.
Well, right now it's like whatever the freaking doTERRA or it's...
some fucking kid trying to sell me a CryptoPunk or a
Bored Ape
or something.
These days. Yeah.
So he boarded the flight. Completely different person starts asking similar questions. What's your name? How long are you going to be out of town? Why are you leaving? And it's so obviously uncomfortable for Gary that the flight attendant comes by and tells the person to take a seat. And then later on in the flight, that person returns, sits behind him, and starts doing the same thing, and is once again interrupted by the flight attendant.
Oof.
Gary's rattled. This is kind of an unsettling event to be happening.
What would you do?
Well, I'd have my headphones on far before any of these interactions.
Have you ever had an interaction where people just ignore the social cue of headphones, though, and just keep trying to talk to you?
Yeah, but I just walk right on past. I'm really good at pretending like I don't see people. What would you do?
You know what I would probably do is I would have really awkward conversation because I would feel too bad to hurt their feelings.
Would you give details about, like, where you're going?
Nope.
Who you are?
Actually, I probably would start by giving too much information because that's always what I do.
Yeah.
And then at some point I'd be like, oh, wait, no, this isn't good. Yeah, I am so sorry. I actually have a bunch of work I need to do. It's really nice talking to you. That's what I would do. I would do something like that.
Bad. It's bad. It's not good.
Yep.
So when he lands, one of the things he thought was that this information was going to be used to maybe rob him while he was out of town. That
makes sense.
Kind of, but like, why would there be someone on your plane
right.
relaying this information back to San Antonio from New York?
Seems like a lot of effort, especially for a guy like, I don't mean to make broad sweeping judgments, but I would imagine most military gentlemen in our country, especially at that age and that level, aren't wildly wealthy.
Sure.
So like, if you're going to go to that much effort to have some target for a robbery,
he's a weird
why him?
Yeah, I agree. Well, why him? When he lands, Sue says that he called his landlady to see if she could watch his place or they could arrange the police to kind of patrol his area.
I don't know if the police have cause to patrol.
Yeah, and that's where I was like, Sue, shut the fuck up. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and why did Sue say that?
I don't know.
Did Sue know or did Sue make that up?
Sue talked to Gary on the phone, so she says. He lands, he goes to his parents' house, settles in. He surprised his family, so everyone's excited to see him. After he puts his bags down, catches up, he decides to call his hometown friend to see if they want to go out. Calls and says, hey, I'm back in town. And the friend says,
boys back in town.
That did not play. He said,
yeah, I know. You just called me 20 minutes ago.
Okay, that's weird.
No, I was on a flight 20 minutes ago. Which also, all of these time details, like I've flown into New York quite a bit. It takes a while to get from
what airport?
Well, I mean, all of them. LaGuardia, JFK,
Newark.
Even Newark. You're
I'm
a Newark
fan of Newark.
I don't
know.
Only
because I saw Kyle MacLachlan in the airport.
Okay, so I'm just saying weird time frame, odd detail. But yeah, he said that I was on plane 20 minutes ago, and the friend said,
"Yeah, you said all that. You said you were in town. You also said that you had a cold, and that's why your voice sounded different.
What?
Yeah. It wasn't long after he got off the phone that Gary would hear from this sick-sounding impersonator himself. Later that night, when the call started coming in from an unlisted number, and the family started recording. This is the first call at 22:30.
Oh, now you're talking to military time, huh?
At 22:30 on February 8th of 1993.
I'll tell you who it is. Yeah. Do you want to speak to him?
To hear the full episode, subscribe to Friday Screamium at patreon.com/Friday. That's patreon.com/Friday.
You've been listening to an Audio Wall original, produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowall.co.